Now, those differences will only be bridged if Admiral Nyarthal and Colonel Solo no longer carry the military weight they do now.
You want me to fire them?
I think you might need to do more than fire them, now that they're used to getting their own way.
I think I know what you mean, and I don't care for that solution.
Nyarthal, ambitious, dangerous. Solo, ambitious, dangerous, and Jedi, too. We can solve the problem for you, permanently.
If you do, I don't need to know about it.
Ben began to visualize the exterior of the terminal buildings. A walkway ran along the roof, a little-used observation deck where anyone could sit and watch vessels taking off and landing. It wasn't a popular spot, but it was perfect for a sniper. As soon as the meeting sounded as if it was coming to an end, Ben had a minute or two to get up on that roof and wait for Gedgen to exit. There were three sets of doors Gedgen could leave through to walk back onto the landing field and rejoin his ship. To cover that span, a couple of hundred meters, Ben would have to be ready to sprint along that platform in either direction from a central point.
I'm ready.
He pressed his arm against his side and felt the Carpaki. It would be almost completely silent. He'd also be standing on top of a stark permacrete platform with no cover.
I'll just have to be fast then.
The conversation between Omos and Gedgen slowed, and there were longer pauses and more restless grunts and sighs. Business was drawing to a close. At a nudge from Lakoff, Ben began walking to the roof turbolift without even looking back. He stood in the turbolift cab with a family of Triani looking for a tap calf, wondering if they could smell his intentions. Ben stepped back into the shadow of a single lonely air conditioning outflow and unfolded the Carpaki. If he held it against the leg of his baggy creased pants, it didn't present such an obvious profile. He settled down to wait for Shivu and Lakoff to do the spotting for him.
Jason's going to go crazy when he hears what Omos has in mind for him.
Ben, heads up.
It was Shivu.
Gedgen's on the move. He's exiting via the south doors. Go right.
Ben checked around him and jogged to the far end of the platform, keeping close to the rear wall. He hoped he'd recognize Gedgen. He studied the man's face and walk intently before the mission, but now he might be looking at the back of his head, depending on the exact path he took back to the ship. But when he looked down on the permacrete and the chaos of ships, freight droids, and species of all kinds wandering around as if it were a theme park, that neat military haircut, jet black, glossy, not a strand out of place, drew his eye like a beacon. He lay prone and sighted up. The optics brought him instantly 100 meters closer to Der Gedgen. And then there was no doubt that he had the right man in his crosswires. As Gedgen walked, two security guards in discreet casual clothes weaved in and out of Ben's shot. As soon as Gedgen dropped, at least one of them would be looking for where the shot had originated. Ben would have to stay low and melt back into the crowds in the airside terminal, then rendezvous with Lakoff at Shivu's transport.
I can do it. I got in and out of center point, didn't I?
Ben held his breath, let the Carpaki's smart optics adjust for wind and angle, and felt his finger tighten on the trigger. 1 second, Gedgen's neat dark head was filling the scope, and the next, Ben was staring at empty permacrete as the rifle kicked back against his shoulder. The muffled report seemed to come from a long way away. Nothing seemed to have gone down in the order he expected. Shot, recoil, drop. He lay flat.
What happened? Did I kill him?
He could hear shouts carried on the air from 3 stories below. His body made the decisions for him, and he found himself scrambling backward to the rear wall, while Shivu's voice in his ear kept saying,
"Get out of there, Ben!"
Speeder Park, Rotunda Zone, Coruscant.
Lumaya had left a magnified wake in the Force, like a water speeder on a lake. While it was generous of her, Mara wasn't amused. "I didn't get stupid overnight," she muttered. "Don't insult me, Tin Can."
"And what were you saying about Luke being too close to all this?"
Jaina asked.
"Deep breaths, Aunt Mara. Deep breaths."
"I'm psyching up. I find it helps.
You use the Force your way and I'll use it mine." "Wow, am I calming you down now?" That's a headline to save for the grandchildren. Mara paced a 10-meter square of the area, feeling dark energies pulsing like shockwaves. Jaina stood back and watched. "She's taken off from here," Mara stated.
"Has she led us here to divert us from somewhere else on Coruscant?"
"She's got a narrow range of targets, Jaina. Ben or Jason. Or even Han and Leia if she's teamed up with Alima. Your parents aren't on Coruscant. And if she's after Jason, she must have had her chance to take him when she got into GAG headquarters to grab Ben's boots."
"So it's Ben."
"Ben's away. He's not on Coruscant. GAG business," Mara said, answering the unasked question. She cast around in the Force, groping for anything that said Lumaya was heading for Volptr, but she had no sense of that at all.
"Okay. If she wants me to follow her, I'll follow.
Let's call in Zek and Jag, because I'm betting Alima's in town again, and no offense, Jaina, but I think it's me she wants. You go find Bug Girl." Mara returned to base to find one of the ground crew waiting patiently by her allocated XJ-7. She climbed into the cockpit and started her instrument check. Mara ignored military air traffic regulations and circled over the area where she'd last picked up Lumaya's powerful wake. If she concentrated, it was relatively easy to follow, and she found herself leaving Coruscant orbit on a bearing for one of the moons, Hesperidium. The wake led to Hesperidium's main resort, which wasn't quite as splendid as Mara recalled. Port traffic control was surprised, to say the least, to find a military vessel on its scanners.
"I need to put down for a while," Mara said, knowing they had no choice about the matter. "Getting weird readings on my instruments. I have to check it out."
When she landed and saw the selection of vessels standing on the private strips of the hotels, she realized that an XJ-7 probably looked like an eccentric billionaire's toy, and a small one at that. She checked around her, in the Force and visually, before sliding out of the cockpit and jumping to the ground. It was early. A couple of hotel guests in sports clothes jogged by and glanced at her, but ran on. She prowled between the vessels on the strip, feeling the darkness pressing on her sternum like a coronary. Something dark was here, and that meant Lumaya. The crushing sensation in her chest was getting so powerful that she ignited her lightsaber's blade, ready to fight when she rounded the next hull.
"This is it, Lumaya. No more games."
She sprang into the gap, lightsaber humming. Staring back at her wasn't a veiled figure with a light whip, but a single disembodied flame-red eye, 10 meters wide. Her instinct said it was alive, an alien being, but it was clearly a ship of some kind. And that meant only one thing. Lumaya was inside. It was a trap. Mara was sure of that. Fine. But sometimes traps swallow prey that's way too big for them. She looked over the hull for a hatch, but the roughly textured surface, was it stone? Was unbroken.
"Come inside."
Mara wondered why she was thinking that, and then realized that the thought was actually a voice inside her head, in the fabric of the Force itself. It was inanimate, yet sentient, and it wasn't a droid. It was the ship. Suddenly, an aperture appeared in the hull, and a ramp extruded. It was too tempting, and she was too old a hand at this kind of game to walk straight in. But she had to know what was going on. She placed her boot on the ramp and took a few cautious steps, lightsaber held two-handed. Mara hesitated on the brow of the ramp. She thought for a minute that she might be pulled in, and the spherical ship would then trap her inside and make a run for it. Mara took a cautious breath and lowered her head to look inside. The ship really was empty. Not just devoid of crew, empty. And that was as far as she got. She felt something coming, and she knew what that something was. She took a few steps back down the ramp and waited, lightsaber still extended. A slim figure in a dark gray suit and veiled triangular headdress stepped into the space between the parked ships.
"Hello, little housewife," said Lumaya.
Mara's autopilot kicked in, and she was the Emperor's hand again. Silent and focused, there was nothing worth saying anyway.
Amateurs gave speeches. Professionals got on with the job. She force-leapt 5 meters at Lumaya, slashing down right to left, two-handed. The stroke, all power, no finesse, clipped the Sith's headdress as she sprang back, slicing off a section. Lumaya's eyes widened, pupils dilated, but she was already whirling her light whip about her head. Mara drew her blaster and rolled under the hull of the ship next to her. The light whip gouged through the durasteel with a shriek of tearing metal, filling the air with the smell of hydraulic fluid, and the spurt of liquid turned into a torrent that began spreading in a thick pool. As Mara rolled clear on the other side of the ship, Lumaya landed heavily on both feet and brought the whip down so close to Mara's head that she felt the rush of air on her right cheek, like a breath. The crack was deafening. Mara wasn't even thinking when she aimed the blaster. Lumaya's whip hand was raised to throw as much weight as possible from the backstroke. A puff of white vapor burst from Lumaya's shoulder, and she staggered a few paces. Metal. Maybe I hit metal. Maybe she had, because Lumaya teetered for a second but came right back. Mara sprang horizontally from a crouch and cannoned into Lumaya's legs with all the power she could muster from the Force. She hit solid durasteel. Blood filled her mouth, but she couldn't feel a thing yet. Clinging to Lumaya's knees with one arm, denying her the space to swing the whip, she brought her down like a felled tree before smashing her head into the woman's face. And that hurt. Oh yes, Mara felt that. She caught not Lumaya's nose, but the cybernetic jaw, and it cut deep into her forehead. Fighting on pure reflex now, part stunned, she killed the lightsaber blade for a second and held the hilt like a dagger, stabbing it down into Lumaya's chest before flicking the energy back on. Lumaya pulled to the side as the blade punched through flesh. Mara smelled it. She flicked off the blade to pull back again, triumphant. I've done it. Dead. Dead, you... But Lumaya was screaming, and that wasn't right at all. The scream seared through Mara's spinning head. It was more than sound. It was... Mara scrambled to her knees to look down at what should have been a dead woman and stared into green eyes that were utterly devoid of any emotion. And then the world darkened like an eclipse. Maybe I'm the one who's dead. Something hit her square in the back, pitching her forward onto Lumaya. Mara struggled to turn over without letting go of either lightsaber or blaster, but something coiled around her neck and jerked her backward. The light whip was still in Lumaya's fist. She could see the thing. She could see it. So what was around her neck, choking her? She felt as if she was flying backward at high speed, and then she hit something so hard that it punched every bit of breath out of her lungs and left her gulping for air. A second or two was all it took. Mara lay trying to suck in air in painful, straining gulps, eyes stinging, and saw Lumaya's boots run past her face at a stagger, missing her by centimeters. What's in my eyes? What's stinging? She raised her hand to rub them, and her knuckles came away red and wet. It was blood. The last thing she saw as she looked up was the orange sphere, that impossible Sith ship soaring vertically into the air and extending webbed veins like living wings. Mara managed to prop herself up on her elbows. I was sure I finished her off. How did I miss? She almost sobbed with frustration and struggled to get into the XJ-7's cockpit, still trying to work out what had jumped her from behind. When she checked her injuries in the reflective surface on her datapad, her face was streaked with blood. Her right eye was swelling and closing already, and there was something like a rope burn across her neck. She could see indentations in her skin that looked like a twisted wire cable. Something like a droid jumped me. A machine, anyway. That's why I didn't sense it. It was crazy to fly a fighter after a head injury, she knew. But there was no other way back to Coruscant. Her adrenaline was ebbing, and the pain was making itself felt now. She settled into a shallow, meditative trance to speed the healing process. Why didn't she kill me? She had the chance. I brained myself on her criffing metal jaw. Then Mara remembered the transponder. She fumbled for the datapad again and activated the search emitter. A yellow blip. No, two yellow blips showed. One was still on Vulptor, Ben. The other was edging across the grid on her screen, moving away from the core. Lumaya. Gotcha, she thought. Lumaya and her bizarre Sith ship were on a bearing for the Hydean Way node. Either she wanted Mara to follow, or she didn't know about the transponder. It was okay. Mara could take her any time now, and two could play the come-and-get-me game.
Jason Solo's office, doors closed, GAG headquarters, Coruscant.
Jason played the recording four or five times before he was satisfied. It was a distorted ground-up shot, the sort that endoscopic strip cams tended to capture. But the soundtrack was clear, and the participants in the meeting were clearly identifiable as the GA Chief of State and the Corellian Prime Minister. There would be no argument that the two men had met, thrown out the GA's entire defense policy, agreed on private terms for a ceasefire without reference to the Supreme Commander or the Senate, and discussed the removal by assassination of Colonel Jason Solo and Admiral Niathal. This was all he needed to justify the next step. I've got you now, Cal Omas. I've got you, you fool. At midnight, after activating an amendment he slipped into some legislation a few days ago, he would have the legal authority to arrest Chief of State Cal Omas for actions likely to present a risk to the security of the Galactic Alliance. He would notify the Supreme Commander, who was, until 0900 tomorrow, the acting Chief of State in Omas's absence, and who would step into his place if for any reason he couldn't discharge his duties.
Charby Spaceport, Vulptor.
It was a lockdown. Ben, like everyone else in the crowd, stood still as a Corellian security officer, Ministerial Protection Branch, he guessed, trained his blaster on the crowd.
Nobody's going anywhere, he said. This port is being sealed by the Vulptor authorities, and you're all going to be scanned for ballistic residue. Why? A male voice called from the crowd. There's been a projectile shooting, the officer said. And I want you all to wait nice and calm, and then we'll check you all out and you'll be free to go.
The hum of murmurs, gasps, clicks, and other varied expressions of horror and impatience swept across the gathering crowd. Ben's gut was knotted tight. He didn't dare look behind him to see where Shivu and Lakoff were. He could feel their presence and had a good idea of their positions, but that wasn't enough. He needed to see them. Carefully, he turned around and caught Lakoff's eye. He ambled over to him, slowing down as he passed so it wasn't obvious they were together. Ben felt everyone could see the rifle folded under his jacket, even though they all seemed far more interested in what was happening beyond the transperisteel doors to the landing area. Red and blue lights were reflecting off the walls as security vehicles streamed onto the field. Lakoff was right next to Ben now. In the crush of passengers and pilots milling around, getting in one another's way, he could press right up against him unnoticed. The lieutenant reached under Ben's coat and grasped the rifle. Ben clamped his arm tight against his side to stop him from taking it.
What are you doing?
Contingency plan. Let go, Ben.
You're gonna dump it?
Yeah. Yeah, I'm gonna get rid of it. Lakoff stood chest to chest with Ben, and after a 2-second, almost immobile tussle that nobody else could see, he loosened Ben's clamped elbow and slid the folded Carpaki under his own jacket. Now stick with the boss. Promise me you will.
You're nuts, Jory.
Yeah, like Granddad. Lakoff moved back along the terminal hall to the central doors that led onto the landing area. Ben went to follow him, but Shivu stepped into his path casually, as if being rude and careless to a stranger. Whatever happens, he said, almost inaudible, lips barely moving. You're to stick with me and follow me unless I get grabbed. In that case, get back to the base any way you can. Lakoff was at the main doors, looking as if he were trying to check where the tourer was. Then, without warning, he grabbed a woman tight around her neck, drew his blaster, and held it to her temple.
Open the doors! He yelled. Open them now or I'll blow her head off!
Pandemonium broke out. People scattered, leaving a clear area around Lakoff. Security officers and a Corellian cop struggled against the tide of bodies trying to get clear, blasters held high. Lakoff was suddenly doing an amazing job of looking red-faced and dangerous. I said open the creaking doors, or you'll be scraping her off the ceiling. Lakoff clicked the blaster, and the woman hostage started shrieking. A thin little wail at first that rose into a full-blown panting sequence of screams and yelps. You're going to let me board my ship and leave here, and she gets to live. Don't mess with me. Don't criffing mess with me.
Just let the lady go, said the officer. Just put the blaster down, let her go.
So you can spray my brains all over the terminal? Yeah, as if.
Kid, this isn't gonna do you any good. We can talk.
Yeah, like you'll have a nice chat with me about Gedgen. I killed the scumbag and I'm proud of it. He was caving into the GA, lining his own pockets. I'm a patriot, you hear? I love Corellia. They ought to give me a medal.
The officer gestured to the security guard at the exit, and the doors parted. Ben watched in horror, unable to move. Lakoff backed out of the doors, half dragging and half carrying the terrified hostage, and made his way laboriously to the tourer. It seemed to take forever. It was a long, long way to struggle with a woman in a headlock, edging backward, followed by a slowly moving knot of police and guards waiting for the first slip that would give them a clear shot at him. Lakoff activated the tourer's ramp and backed up it. The woman had stopped screaming and started sobbing.
Okay, out now.
Shiva was right behind Ben, mouth right next to his ear, and he grabbed his collar in a slow, twisting grip to show he meant business.
Slow and calm. Don't waste this. He's bought us time. Ben wanted to yell, but what about him?
He didn't, though. He'd already abandoned too much of his training, and this wasn't the way soldiers did it. His legs were shaking under him. Lakoff reached the top of the ramp and shoved the woman down it. The hatch slammed behind him, leaving the hostage crying and screaming on the permacrete. Police rushed forward to grab her. Marksmen moved in to take up positions around the vessel. Now everyone else in the terminal was forgotten, and the Corellian officer ran onto the field, met up with his buddy, and ran for the cordon.
Ben, that's it. Come on.
Shivu jerked on his collar, pulling him bodily toward the doors at the south end of the terminal. A little bit of Ben was calculating where they would be placing troops and what their tactics would be for stopping Lakoff from taking off. If Lakoff got a move on, he could be out of orbit and jumping to light speed before whatever excuse Vulture had for a fleet could get airborne. But the tourer sat on the permacrete, silent. No haze of heat exhaust venting from its jets. He could see it through the transparisteel walls as he moved toward escape and couldn't feel relief. It dawned on Ben that Lakoff wasn't going anywhere. Maybe the thing had failed to start. Oh no, no, no. The drive hadn't stalled on him. Ben could feel Lakoff now, terrified, oddly triumphant, and with a strange sense of peace despite the dread. It was the strangest combination Ben had ever sensed in the Force.
What's he doing, sir? How's he getting out?
Shivu kept swallowing. Ben saw the lump in his throat bob up and down. Has to be done.
What has to be done?
A good cover story.
Slave One laid up outside Keldabe, Mandalore.
It was a very interesting news day. Fett had his cockpit monitor tuned to the news channel, watching the wheels come off the rest of the galaxy. He'd seen that happen often enough to spot the signs of a greater chaos to come. Usually it meant a time of good fees and rich pickings for bounty hunters. Now his priorities had to be a little different, and he waited for a call from the office of Sass Sikili, the Verpine, whose job was to communicate with outsiders on behalf of Roche. The Verpine were getting anxious. How any species that churned out that many high-quality ornaments could get anxious, Fett didn't understand. But that was the Verpine for you. Insectoids could get jumpy, and when one got jumpy, the hive mind made them all jittery. Fett pondered the assassination while he waited. He couldn't say he was sorry to see the passing of Dirk Edgen, but at least the Barv paid promptly. Fett had been betting on him staying in office for more than a few short months before getting the inevitable shot in the head, though. It was indecently premature, even by the standards of Corellian politics. Who had really killed him? Not some Corellian hick waving the flag, that was for sure. Gedgen had a line of would-be killers that would have stretched from here to the core.
Mandalore Fett, said a voice on the comlink.
It was high-pitched, a little above tenor, and buzzed with a faint resonance.
We noted your return with delight.
Need someone dragged screaming to your hive, Sakili?
Not today, thank you. But we have a business proposition for you.
I'm all ears.
We hear exciting things about iron deposits, which we assume to be true.
They are.
And many highly desirable things can be made with Mandalorian iron. We would like to acquire some.
Happy to sell, when we have a surplus for export.
We note the unstable nature of the galaxy these past months, which will be exacerbated, we expect, by the passing of Prime Minister Gedgen.
Yeah, good times for the arms trade.
Indeed. But also anxious times for us, when Mercana challenges our markets, and now Keemstor I talks of war with Mercana, which is too close for the Hive's taste.
You pack enough hardware to make Mercana and Keemstor I into their own asteroid field, Sakili. If the kid comes from Roche, spit it out.
We are literal people, Fett.
I'm literal too. Let's all be literal together.
Sakili went quiet for a moment. Fett could hear the faint clicking of his mouth parts.
Now that you have abundant Beskar, you'll rearm. Roche is on the borders of your sector. Last time Mandalorians had plenty of Beskar, the Mandalore sector became much, much bigger.
Verpine took a little time to explain where they were heading, grinding through each step of the sequence. But they got there in the end.
You're worried we'll expand all over you,
said Fett.
Invade you?
Yes, it's the specialty of your species.
We're homebodies now. We like to put our feet up and watch the holovids.
When you make jokes, the hives become more worried because you're not a joking man. Therefore...
It was getting painful, and he didn't want to hear Sakili's character analysis. Fett found it amusing that he hadn't threatened or hinted about the fate of Roche, or even thought much about it. But that had always been part of his armory, as it had been for Mandalorians as a whole. They had a certain reputation that did the advance work for them.
Sign a treaty with us, then.
To do what, Fett?
Non-aggression pact. Neighborly mutual aid.
You have nothing to fear from us. So you'll want something in exchange, because you're a mercenary and...
Bounty hunter, part-time. What I want is the mutual bit.
What can we do for you to avoid being added to your collection?
Supply us with exclusive products in exchange for our exclusive metal. We give you our special skills, military strength, and you give us yours. In defense technology and quality control. Maybe even joint work on new projects.
Ah, you Mandalorians have always adopted technology from others. You might forcibly adopt ours now.
Deal's on the table. You made me notice you. Bad idea.
Sakili was silent again. Verpines had a way of communicating instantly with all Hive members through some organ in their chests. Fett guessed that Sakili was consulting the Hive.
Deal accepted. We'll need details.
I'll get my people to talk to your people.
Fett could imagine the reaction on Coruscant and Corellia.
We look forward to a long and productive alliance with Roche.
We will announce this happy and reassuring news. Good day, Fett.
Fett noticed a message was waiting for him. It could have been relayed straight to his HUD, but Jang Skirata did things his own idiosyncratic way.
I see you did right by Mandalore. I'll do right by you.
Fett hadn't judged wrong then. He dropped his dose of capsules into his palm and washed them down with a mix of water and the cocktail of liquid drugs that Belluene had prescribed. It was just slowing down his decline, not stopping it. Jang hadn't said he'd succeeded.
Death's a motivator, not a threat. You've still got things to achieve before you become fertilizer. You'll just have to do them sooner rather than later.
Fett switched on the monitor in his cramped quarters and sat back with a pack of dry rations to watch the news as Corellia went into meltdown and the Verpine government of Roche announced talks with Mondalore to agree to a mutual aid and trade treaty. He decided tomorrow might be a very good day to go public on the Besulik.
Jedi Council Chamber, Coruscant, emergency meeting.
This one,
said Master Saba Sabatine,
would like to be assured that the Alliance had nothing to do with Gejin's death. It was unnecessary.
Luke couldn't blame her for jumping to conclusions. It was his first thought, too. And his second thought was that the GA agents, or even Jason, had a hand in it. But the assassin had, it seemed, sealed himself in his ship and blown it up. A Corellian-registered ship scattering solidly Corellian evidence. Luke had seen crazier things than that. It was a zealot's act, and all too common. There are plenty of Corellians with reasons to want Gejin dead, he said. Where had Mara got to? He half expected her to stride through the doors of the chamber carrying Lumaya's head in triumph. But I'll conduct my own investigations. Corrin Horn looked up from his clasped hands, which he'd been studying with unnatural concentration. It couldn't have been easy watching his homeworld plunge into recrimination and finger-pointing.
It's less about who actually did it than who the various factions think did it, and that won't be influenced by anything as irrelevant as hard facts.
Well, I need to know, and I don't want HNE telling me, Luke said. Kip, can you monitor the headlines while we're meeting?
Time was, said Kip Duren, when the government of the day used to keep the Jedi Council informed, and we didn't have to rely on the media.
Yes, Luke had noticed that the Council was no longer kept in the loop. He returned to the main issue.
So what if it is us?
So far, everyone had managed to avoid mentioning Jason. Kyle Katarn joined in.
Is assassinating heads of state legal?
In a war, I believe it is.
Just to spice up the mix, the Mandalorians are joining forces with the Verpine.
Kip seemed to be listening to the news via an earpiece, judging by the glazed and defocused look in his eyes.
What does that sound like to you?
Luke thought of Fett's dead daughter, Jason's guilt, and Fett's track record.
They're rearming, Luke said. They said they were staying neutral.
Kyle shook his head slowly, brushing specks from his lap in a distracted way.
Oh yeah, if my long-lost daughter was tortured to death by the GA's secret police, I'd be neutral. First thing I'd do, walk away and be very, very neutral.
You don't have to be on one of two sides to rearm, or even take part in a war, Luke said.
Still, nobody said the J word, but Luke could hear the name at the back of every mind.
Well, we know a few facts. Kyle counted off on his fingers. One, Mandalorians aren't exactly heavily represented in social services and the caring professions. Two, they have a brand new supply of that iron of theirs for their war machine. Three, allying with the Verpine makes them the single most powerful producer of advanced weapons technology. Four, I hear they're still sore about getting no help to rebuild post-war when they went out on a limb for the New Republic.
It's not good, is it? Said Corrin.
I'm betting they'll step up for Corellia in the next few days.
Fett's said to have killed Sal Solo, or at least one of his Mondo thugs did. Where does that leave them?
Luke had heard the real story from Han.
I think we should offer Jedi meditation to both the GA and Corellia as far as the assassination goes, he said. I know it sounds bizarre in the middle of a war, but there's war with rules and there's war with no holds barred, and we need to...
The doors opened, and Mara walked in.
Sorry I'm late, she said. Ran into a few problems.
She managed to stop the meeting dead. Luke stared in horror at her face. She had a black eye and a split lip. She was holding herself as if her ribs hurt. She settled into her seat in the circle with slow care.
Ran into an armored division, more like, said Kip, staring. What happened to you? And where shall we send the flowers for the other guy? And this is after a healing trance.
She smiled, and it was genuine, but there was definite anxiety.
Sorry to interrupt, she went on.
I assume we're worrying about the implications of Gedgen's death and Mandalorian rearmament.
Forget that for just a second, Luke said. Mara, I need to know what happened to you.
Why, darling, thank you for asking. I'm very well, just a flesh wound.
She shook her head in disbelief, but it seemed aimed at herself.
Look, I caught Lumaya. She's in a worse state than I am, believe me.
And?
The situation's under control. Where is she? I'm tracking her to her base.
All 11 council members were waiting in complete silence for Mara's next words.
It's no good looking at me like that, she said. I'm not discussing it, I'm not sharing the mission, and I'm not going to take it easy, which I'll bet is going to be someone's suggestion. Yes?
Mara hath spoken, said Kip. But that doesn't stop me asking where Lumaya is and what she's driving.
Nice try. But go find your own deranged Darksider to play with, because Lumaya's mine.
Corin gave Luke a knowing smile.
She's fine. Luke moved the meeting on.
Can we actually do anything about the Gedgen situation here and now?
There was a chorus of reluctant no around the circle.
Okay, then. All we can do is keep an eye on the situation, and I've got a request in with Omos to see him as soon as he gets back.
You know what happens when heads of state are away when a crisis breaks, Kip pointed out.
They take a pounding in the polls, and it's the beginning of the end. Let's make the most of Omos while we can.
Who's friendly with Nyathol?
They all turned to look pointedly at Silgall. She tilted her head slightly to fix Luke with one eye, always a disconcerting thing in a Mon Calamari.
Just because we're Mon Cals, Luke, it doesn't mean we have guaranteed harmony. We come from different schools of thought.
You're Akbar's niece, and I bet that counts for a lot with a Mon Cal admiral.
I'll do my best, then.
The meeting broke up, Mara remaining seated. Luke waited until everyone was well out of earshot, and then walked over to squat in front of Mara and put his hands on her knees.
You can't keep this from me. I headbutted her, that's all. Metal jaw, non-metal head. If you got that close, how did she get away?
Oh, bad question. Luke braced for an onslaught about shaking hands again.
I think she has a droid with her. Something jumped me from behind, and it wasn't organic.
Mara showed him a discolored mark like a rope burn at the front of her neck.
Whatever it is, it can pay out a metal cable. And she has this weird spherical ship, like a disembodied orange eye.
Don't you think that's all a good case for not hunting her alone?
She wants me to catch up with her. I'll be extra ready next time. And there will be a next time.
The farm was a rambling collection of buildings scattered around a stone farmhouse with impressive dirtworks and defensive walls. At the back of the building, and connected to it by an underground tunnel, stood a workshop with a smithy. Fett could hear the rhythmic hammering of metal across the clearing. There was no smoke curling from the roof. Baveen walked down the steps cut into the hard-packed soil and leading down to the front door. It opened, and Dinua, his adopted daughter, stood with hands on hips.
Boots,
she said ominously, pointing at the clods of dung and mud. Two small children clung to her legs.
You too, Mandalore. And you can take those coveralls off as well, Buir.
Okay.
Baveen, spy, fixer, veteran commando, was driven back by a resolute woman. But Dinua had fought and killed Yuuzhan Vong from the age of 14. So making a mess on her clean floor wasn't to be attempted rashly.
We'll go the long way around.
They trampled around the perimeter of the farmhouse, following the sound of ringing metal. As the door to the workshop swung open, a blast of warm air registered on his sensors. The interior was bathed in a red glow. Sparks flew in arcing showers. A mountain of a man in a singlet, burn-scarred leather apron and ear defenders was hammering a strip of red-hot metal. Every time he raised his arm, sweat flew from him and hissed into steam on the hot surfaces. He folded the strip with tongs as he hammered, layering the metal with a steady rhythm
that said he was a master armorsmith. After a while, he realized Fett and Baveen were standing, watching. He gestured with an impatient jab of his finger to show he was going to finish working the metal before he'd stop to talk. Fett could see from the length and emerging form of the metal bar that he was making a Beskad, the traditional saber of the ancient Mandalorians. Baveen had one, an antique blade fashioned from Mandalore's unique iron, Beskar.
There.
Medrid Vasur cooled the rough form of saber in a tub of hissing liquid and turned it this way and that to check the line.
Now that's gonna be a thing of beauty. Marika! I haven't told him yet, said Baveen. Shall I blurt it out then? You're the metallurgist. Mandalore, Madrid said stiffly. You're looking at a test forging from a new load of Beskar.
It took Fett a slow second to grasp the importance of what Madrid had said.
But the Empire strip mined Mandalore. They took all the iron.
They missed a bit. A big bit.
How? And how big?
This is a big planet with a tiny population, and even the Imperials didn't survey all of it. They stripped the shallow veins. This is a deeper load, and we'd never have found it if the Vongees hadn't left craters you could sink a small moon in. There's a crew a few hundred clicks north of Ansari still doing test drills, but it looks like a big, big load that was exposed.
Beskar was the toughest metal known to science. Even lightsabers had trouble with it. There had been a time when every army in the galaxy wanted a supply. It was still the most valuable metal on the market, and there was a war raging around them.
I feel a new economic era coming on, said Fett.
Baveen winked.
Oya, Manda!
And it's not on anyone's land.
Fett realized the reason he'd never quite got a handle on what Mandalorian government actually meant was because it was so nebulous.
This is a resource for Mandalore as a whole.
If you say it is, then it is. That's the Mandalore's prerogative.
Okay, I say it is. Time to gather the chieftains and do a little forward planning.
Shab,
said Medrit, underwhelmed by the Mandalore's power to requisition resources.
You're sounding just like a proper head of state.
Coruscant Military Spaceport.
Ben sat in the cargo hold of the ship long after the ground crew had secured the landing dampers and the drives had cooled completely. He was almost comfortable staring at the bulkhead opposite, in the sense that he had feared taking his eyes off it. If he did that, the numbing meditation he'd slipped into would be broken, and he would have to think. Jory Lakoff was gone. It was one of those facts he couldn't take in even when he saw it happen. The guy had been alive and well the night before, even hours ago. And now he didn't exist. Ben simply couldn't feel death.
Come on, Ben. The techs want to start stripping down this crate.
Captain Shivu stood in the hatch, fingers hooked over the top edge of the combing. Ben felt that if he moved, the whole world would come unraveled.
I'll be along in a minute.
Shivu waited for a moment, and then came to sit down with him.
We don't lose many troopers in Special Forces. It makes it harder when we do. I think. It's hard for me anyway.
Ben gambled on whether to speak or not. He took a breath and waited to feel everything around him shatter.
He didn't have to die, sir.
Once he heard his own voice, Ben just felt like he couldn't breathe. Nothing worse.
He could have taken off. We could have run for it or even been captured, and the job would still have been done.
Ben, our orders were to make it look like a Corellian schism, and not to get caught or leave a trail. Can't have a Jedi exposed as assassins, especially not you. We had to get you out of there.
It didn't have to be me. Any trooper could have done the job. I wanted to do my duty, but if it hadn't been me, if Jory hadn't felt he had to protect my identity, he'd be alive.
Ben, what do you think would have happened to him if he'd been taken back to Corellia?
Shivu lowered his voice.
You saw what we do here to prisoners. You think worse than that can't happen in Coronet?
So what if I had been caught? My dad would have been humiliated? So what? Jory's life for dad being upset?
I could give you a list of reasons why having Corellia think their own kind did it helps the GA. But you don't want to hear that right now.
Shivu stood up and beckoned to Ben to follow. He meant it.
There are anti-Gedgen factions claiming responsibility, so the mission worked fine, strategically. Now go home, and take a couple of days off.
Shivu stopped a passing ground crew speeder and told the driver to get Ben back to HQ.
Wash that stuff out of your hair and go home.
An hour later, Ben found himself staring at his familiar reflection in the HQ refreshers, toweling his hair and wondering if Jason had set him up.
I didn't have to do the job. Any one of us could have passed unnoticed at a spaceport.
But it was hindsight. Jason had tasked him to do it before anyone knew where the meeting would take place.
Ben still felt something was wrong, but couldn't pin it down.
He just lost his buddy. Maybe that made you think crazy things. When he left the HQ building and walked out into the late afternoon sun, completely disoriented by the shifts in planetary time over the last 48 hours, he lowered his head and just walked aimlessly, hands in pockets. Suddenly, he felt someone's hand on his shoulder. He almost shrieked. He'd shut out everything around him. Then he found he was staring into his mother's face, and something was terribly wrong.
Mom! Who hit you?
Forget that, Ben. She hugged him to her, a really desperate and crushing embrace.
I've got some questions, and I will absolutely not be stalled this time.
She had hold of his shoulders, eyes scanning his face as if she was looking for injury.
This is between you and me. I swear, not your father.
They ended up in a tap calf in the Osarian quarter. Mara lowered her voice.
I want to know why you've been to Volptor.
Ben was stunned. How could she possibly know?
I haven't.
You can stop the game. I know where you've been, and I have a horrible feeling I know why. The whole planet's seen the news. Mara just stared at him, not blinking. Suddenly, not his mom at all. He was supposed to deny everything. He stared back, silent. Ben thought of Jory Lakoff and felt his stomach starting to knot and shake. He desperately wanted to blurt out that his buddy had died and that he wanted to roll time back to before he'd fallen into this mess and that... He couldn't get it out. She put her hand on his and squeezed.
Mom, if I tell you, will you tell me who hit you? Okay, it was Lumaya. I caught her, but she got away. I gave her a good hiding, and she won't get away next time. Now, your turn.
Ben took a deep breath. This was either going to make everything better, or be the start of something disastrous. He couldn't tell. All his force impressions had deserted him.
I did it, Mom.
Involved or did it? Ben's mouth took over without his permission.
Folding stock Carpaki, frangible round.
Mara actually sat back in her chair, and her left hand moved as if she was about to put it to her mouth. Her right hand was still clamped tight on his.
Okay,
she said.
Lakoff was killed, Mom.
Ben couldn't remember if she knew Lakoff or not. It didn't matter. He needed to say his name and tell someone.
Jory got killed. He got killed to save my skin.
Mara busied herself sipping from the cup in front of her.
Why did you do it, Ben?
Orders. I was the best person to do it.
Your whole company is suddenly short of snipers?
Whose orders? Jason.
Mara was doing a reasonable job of not reacting, but Ben wasn't fooled. She was furious.
Okay, sweetheart, she said. Let's not tell your dad, because he'll rip Jason's head off in the mood he's in at the moment. Can you face coming home?
I don't think so. I don't think I can sit and have dinner and not talk about this to him.
Okay, so where are you planning on going?
Home. Jason's apartment.
Ben could see she wasn't keen on the idea.
Or Captain Shivu's place.
Wherever you feel safest, Ben. I won't force you to come back with me as long as you swear you'll come to me the second you have problems. Okay?
Okay.
I'm sorry about your friend, I really am.
Nobody's ever gonna know how brave he was.
I know. Are you angry with me? Stupid question, you must be. How can I be, after what I used to do?
She gripped both of his hands, as if she was afraid he'd run away. This is what we made you, isn't it? We wanted you to be like us. We wanted you to be a Jedi and do your duty.
Mara was quiet for a while, gazing out the window onto the sky lane packed with traffic and clearly thinking hard.
You still haven't told me how you knew, Mom.
She jerked back to the conversation, blinking.
No, I haven't. But I know, and I'm the only one who does. And I also know you can hide in the Force like Jason does. And it scares me, because the first time I felt it, I thought you'd been killed. Please, Ben, don't hide from me, ever.
I wasn't, Mom. I was just trying it out.
Okay. Am I gonna feel bad about, you know, the other guy? Because right now, I don't care.
I didn't, she said, seeming to understand he meant Gedgen. Not until lately. And then it didn't feel like guilt, just not quite understanding why I did it. Because being what I was didn't explain it all to me.
I better go.
You'll be okay. I'll always be there, remember. Call me.
Ben leaned forward to kiss her on the cheek. He loved her so much right then. What other mom could take news like that, horrific news, and still be there for him?
He leaned farther and whispered in her ear.
He was having a secret meeting at the port with Omas to discuss a ceasefire.
When Ben straightened up, she smiled, but there was a real glint in her eye that said she was anything but happy.
Thank you, she said. I love you, Ben. Call me, okay?
Love you too, Mom.
Republica House, Coruscant, 0100 hours, Galactic Standard Time.
Jason Solo, in the formal uniform of a colonel of the Galactic Alliance Guard, stood outside the lobby of the Republica building, flanked by Sergeant Warut and Trooper Lim. It was a real shame about Lakoff. He was a great loss. Ben had done well, but he should have been back at work right away. Jason planned to talk to Shivu later about sending Ben on leave without clearing it with him first.
You sure this is going to be enough, sir? Asked Warut. Just three of us?
Jason smoothed his black gloves down over his fingers. It was 1 minute past midnight, and that made what he was about to do thoroughly legal, justified, and overdue. I don't think Chief Omas has a platoon up there somehow. Warut didn't reply. Jason was the first to admit that going to arrest the elected head of the most powerful organization in the galaxy with a couple of troopers was low-key. But he saw no point flooding the area with an entire company. Omas wouldn't put up a fight. If he did, one Jedi and two armed troopers were ample to deal with it. Jason opened the comlink to Niathal.
We're in position now, he said. We're going in.
I have an emergency appointment with Senator Gasil in 10 minutes. He's not happy about it, but I told him it couldn't wait.
He's got no inkling of what's happening?
If he has, he hasn't shown the slightest sign of acting upon it.
Okay. There's no going back now. We're committed.
Just do it.
The security guard in the front reception was a man used to seeing all kinds of uniforms wandering in and out of Republica House. The luxurious tower housed the elite of the GA, and every senator seemed to have his or her own entourage of bodyguards as well as military visitors. Most Coruscanti knew what a GAG uniform looked like by now anyway. Jason had made sure his secret police were anything but secret, at least in terms of their existence, but he gave the guard proper identification without being asked. There was no point being rude or throwing his weight around. The man was only doing his job. No need to announce me, Jason said. The guard checked his data pad.
You're on his admission list anyway. Go on up.
It took minutes for the turbolift to reach Omas's floor. As the cab climbed, the two troopers simply stared at the wall ahead of them. Jason felt their reluctance and wanted to know if it was due to a fondness for Omas or a distaste for military coups, but he didn't ask. Any army that liked the idea of a coup wasn't worth having. It had to be the last resort.
how the other half lives,
Marut said as the turbolift doors opened onto a lobby of extraordinary luxury. The air was perfumed, a pleasantly neutral woody scent, and the broad corridor was lined with niches filled with rare Naboo crystal. Omas had a weakness for that, and iridescent Shalui ceramics.
I could fit my apartment and my 10 neighbors in here.
If we put fancy pottery in the corridors of my building, it wouldn't be there long, said Lim.
She cast an envious eye at a shimmering red vase that changed gradually to green and turquoise as the angle of the observer changed.
Still, his insurance payments must hurt.
Possessions are burdens, Jason smiled. What you have can always be taken away, so wealth breeds fear.
I'll willingly face that kind of fear, sir, Wirut muttered. And a nice big Soro subyacht. That would scare me very nicely.
The magnificent doors to Omas's apartment were engraved bronzium, an abstract design by one of Coruscant's top artists. Jason couldn't recall the name. It seemed a waste of talent when the doors were only seen by Omas, his inner circle, the housekeeping staff, and repair droids. Republica House had the kind of architecture and design that warranted public tours. Jason paused, marshaling his thoughts before pressing the bell. The troopers stood back and pulled down their visors, standard procedure for entering a building. For a moment, Jason thought they were going to stack either side of the door, but they were simply taking a pace backward, Lim keeping an eye on the corridor as a routine precaution. Omas answered the door himself. Jason knew he didn't have day and night close protection these days, but somehow he expected a droid or even a real butler to receive callers. The chief of state looked at him with a puzzled frown, and then at the two troopers.
Good evening, Jason.
He stepped back and ushered them in.
Wretched business, this shooting. I can't say I like Gedgen, but it shows how careful we have to be in our line of work.
He ambled down a long hallway that made the corridor outside look like a lower-level slum. The art on the walls was breathtaking, and most of it seemed to predate the Yuuzhan Vong invasion. Some gallery curator had a very secure hiding place then. At the end, Omas turned around.
Can I get you good people something to drink before we sit down?
Somehow it would have been so much easier if Omas had been hostile.
Sir, said Jason, I'm arresting you in the name of the Galactic Alliance for activity likely to compromise the safety of the state.
Omas frowned slightly, as if he hadn't heard right. He walked a few steps back along the passage where the downlighters cast pools of light on the velvet pile ruby carpet.
I beg your pardon?
You're under arrest, sir. We'll let you call your lawyer later, but right now it would be a good idea if you came with us.
Omas gave a little snort of amusement.
Jason, my dear boy, this is Cal Omas you're talking to. Don't be such a prat. Arrest me? Arrest me?
Jason reached in his jacket and took out a data pad. Under the terms of the Emergency Measures Act, anyone, including heads of state, politicians, and any other individuals believed to be presenting a genuine risk to the security of the Galactic Alliance, can now be detained. That's a quote, sir. The amendment to the law to include heads of state came into effect at midnight, and you are a head of state. Omas looked stunned rather than alarmed. Jason was used to the GAG producing fear when they paid a visit, but amazement was disconcerting.
I saw that amendment come through on the notification circular yesterday,
Omas said, still quite casually conversational.
Good grief. You really did it, didn't you? You actually changed the law and planned this.
Sir,
am I allowed to know what risk I'm supposed to pose to my own state?
I can show you, sir, Jason said, and switched his datapad to the strip cam footage of the meeting with Gedgen.
He queued it up and then held the pad so that Omas could see the screen. Please feel free to view it all, and then tell me if that's not you in the room, with two Alliance intel officers, the late Prime Minister, and his two Corsec protection officers. The look on Omas's face was priceless. Jason felt a flood of relief that he had finally made Omas realize that he was now a man with no future. Omos stared at the datapad and did indeed watch the whole meeting. Behind Jason, Wirut and Lim waited in patient silence.
Well,
said Omos,
what can I say?
Sergeant Wirut will accompany you to pack an overnight bag, Jason said. We'll take you out as discreetly as possible.
Secretly? Oh, I see.
No, sir. You're not going to disappear and turn up floating face down in some sewer. This will be conducted legally and openly. Omos stared impassively into Jason's face and then looked past him at the two troopers. Jason could feel the man's fear, even though he looked perfectly at ease.
Sergeant, I do keep a bag packed for eventualities,
Omos said, almost smiling. There was nothing worse than a dignified detainee. Jason knew that within 24 hours, the barracks and the CSF bar would be full of gossip about how magnificently brave Omos had been. Wirut disappeared into the bedroom while Lim stood guard. Omos stepped a little closer to Jason, his face centimeters away, so close that his breath brushed Jason's skin like a hand.
You obnoxious, power-crazed, ludicrous little jerk, he said sweetly, with the smile of an indulgent grandfather. You had Gedgen killed too, didn't you?
Jason waited for him to spit in his face and still smile, but Omos conducted himself impeccably as he left. Wirut walked behind him, blaster visible but not jammed into the Chief of State's back, and Jason led the way. It was the longest, most awkward turbolift descent that Jason could imagine. When they reached the lobby, the security guard stared for a moment, put down his halozine, and stood up.
Sir, what's happening?
Would you water the plants while I'm away, please?
Omos said pleasantly.
I'm afraid I'm under arrest.
There was a second GAG transport waiting outside. Wirut and Lim ushered Omos into it, then watched it speed away to GAG headquarters. Jason found that his hands were shaking. It was an effort to take out his comlink. Admiral, it's done, he said. Time for a public announcement. Wirut pushed back his visor and wiped his face with his glove.
That, he said, was the hardest thing I've ever done. Next time, sir, can I volunteer for snatching heavily armed Wookiee psychopaths? It'd be a lot easier on my nerves.
Wirut and Lim joked, but the arrest had crossed an emotional line for them, and it showed. Jason climbed into the speeder beside them and took a long route through the canyons of buildings, checking for signs that Coruscant, the heart of galactic democracy, had undergone a silent, bloodless, and thoroughly civilized military coup. Outside government buildings and bank headquarters, small groups of GA ground forces stood guard. It looked like no more than the routine public order precautions for festival nights, except the uniforms were not the blue of CSF.
Weird,
said Lim.
Poor old Jory, Wirut sighed. Poor kid. He was so keen to live up to his granddad.
Jason rubbed his eyes and realized he was in for another very long day, and the sun wasn't even up yet. I won't forget that, he said. I never will.
Senate Building, Coruscant.
Senator Gasil glanced at the holocams that transmitted Senate debates to every office, restaurant, and public area in the Senate building, then shook his head, eyes closed for a moment.
Full house, he said. You better have a good speech ready, Char. A really good one.
Niathal adjusted her uniform and prepared to go out onto the Chief of State's platform to address the Senate. Things weren't playing out quite as she'd imagined, but then battles never did, and the political arena was as prone to the fog of war as any fleet engagement. Jason Solo, whom she expected to see strutting around the Senate, was keeping a low profile.
It's temporary. It's for the duration of the war, and no ordinary citizens will notice an adverse impact on their lives,
she said, rehearsing her key messages.
Play a bit of Omos's clandestine meeting footage, wave around the news of Mandalore and Roche, and everyone nods and says, "Yes, indeed, Admiral, we live in dangerous times. Please do look after us as interim government, while the Chief of State's office is thoroughly investigated."
"I like Jason," Gasil said, suddenly very quiet. "But is he reliable these days?"
"Reliable for what?"
"I would never have authorized the Gedgen business. It was extreme."
"It's done. Corellia's wobbling a little, because their assorted lunatic fringes have given us a massive bonus by claiming they did it. Bothui has been brought up short, because they probably think we did it, but can't believe we had the nerve. And, well, I never thought I'd live to say this, but those ghastly little Mandalorian savages have been wonderfully helpful."
"Char, I don't want to worry you, but have you noticed their rearming? With Verpine Tech, too."
"I certainly have. Best news of the week. Gaville, will you run for the Chief of State's office in due course?"
"Will there be Chief of State?"
"I fully intend to return to elections and civil rule once the war is over."
"Then no, I won't. I'm fine not being where Omas was. If a thing can happen once, it can happen twice." Gasil steered her toward the access to the floating platform. "You need to watch your back with Jason."
"I know,"
she said.
"So I'm neutralizing him now. Start as you mean to go on."
Gasil followed her onto the platform. Nyathal looked down at her boots as she stepped onto the platform, and when she looked up, the sheer scale of the Senate chamber unsettled her for a split second. It was a blessing. She knew her genuine dismay would come across as humble reluctance. There was nothing worse for a new military dictator than looking too keen. For a chamber of thousands of delegates, even with the recent secessions and defections, it was remarkably quiet. Her platform drifted serenely into the center of the massive chamber. She was looking into lights and shadows, generally unable to see faces. It was, in so many senses, a theatrical stage, complete with being blinded by footlights.
"Gentle beings, I never expected to be addressing you in this way, and I find myself barely prepared for it. I greatly regret the need to stand on this platform, but the need has arisen. It will be a need for the shortest period possible, and apart from the temporary leadership of the GA, nothing else will change. I stress that. There is no curfew, no censorship, and none of the other trappings of martial law. Had Chief Omos been taken ill, I would be standing here anyway, and nobody would be panicking. What's happened overnight is no more constitutionally significant than that. I've merely exercised my responsibility as the Supreme Commander to deputize the Chief of State on the advice of the GA Security Services. As soon as the general security situation with the Confederacy is resolved, and I expect that to be within the short term, I'll step down and we'll hold elections for the Chief's office."
There wasn't a single lie in there. There was never any need to lie. She meant every word. There was simply information that the Senate didn't have. And everyone went through life with an incomplete picture of the galaxy anyway. One of the representatives of Kuat signaled to speak.
"When you refer to the security services, Admiral, do you mean Alliance Intel or the GAG?
Nyathal wondered if Gasil had engineered the question because it was so perfectly on cue.
"I'd like to share some material with you,"
she said,
"so that you understand where the need to act arose."
It was possibly contempt of court to show the images of Omas's meeting with Gedgen. Evidence like that would prejudice his chance of a fair trial. But she had a shrewd idea that Omos wouldn't be cleared by a jury, returned to work with his reputation intact, and sue the GA for wrongful arrest. In his case, the arrest was verdict and sentence in one. She gestured for the images to be projected onto the viewing screen on each delegate's platform. It was gratifying to hear the faint exclamations of surprise as the scene played out, complete with Alliance intel officers. Nyathol displayed a little dignified pain at the moment of betrayal when Durgedjian discussed how to remove her and Jason from their posts. The silence that followed was perfect.
So you'll understand why I felt I had to take advice from the GAG. Because Alliance Intel's objectivity may have been compromised by attendance at that meeting. And while it's not illegal for two heads of state at war to have discussions, it's unacceptable for them to plan the removal of a Supreme Commander without consulting the Security and Intelligence Council.
She hoped they noted that the chair of that council was sitting at her right hand. It was time for him to do his party piece. So she sat down and let Gasil have the floor.
I've got very little to add, Gasil said, except to say that I'm saddened to come to this. A word about the presence of GA troops on the streets alongside CSF officers. This is simply a precaution in case the anarchic elements on Coruscant try to take advantage of the situation. As in any democracy, they have the right to exist and to speak. But if any of them attempt to capitalize on the situation, then the rule of law will be upheld.
Where there is no need for the anarchists to overthrow the government now, is there?
Said the delegate from Harun Kal.
You got there first.
With that in mind,
Nyathol continued,
I intend to ask Colonel Jason Solo to act as Joint Chief of State with me. A matter of checks and balances, so that the temporary power doesn't rest with one person, and one can subject the other to scrutiny.
She let the comment pass. Nobody else picked up on it. Gasil followed her back to her office. She sat down and felt the relief flood her.
Next,
said Gasil, and poured two cups of caff from the dispenser.
We have a breathing space while the senators panic about their share prices and the Corellian administration flounders like beached daggers.
Reopen the stock exchange,
she said.
I need to see the finance secretary at some point today to arrange for treasury intervention if the market panics again. I'm bringing Alliance Intel under GAG command and assigning Captain Gurdon to that.
Oh, classic.
And I want Omos's office sealed until further notice.
Gasil looked mildly surprised.
You're not moving in there?
I'm not, and neither is Jason. It smacks of enthusiasm for power rather than necessary duty. We seal it as it stands, which is best practice in terms of allowing CSF to preserve a potential crime scene.
She tapped the internal comlink code for Senate Building Maintenance into her desk keypad.
And nobody fights over whose chair it is.
Jedi Council Chamber.
It had been a long night, and the morning's news left Luke reeling. He looked at Mara across the chamber, noted that her injuries were largely healed, and wondered when she was going to be ready to talk to him about what was making her grind her teeth in her sleep. Something had got to her, and the fact that she was silent and not raging about it worried him. It meant it was more than Lumaya or Alima.
Makes you wonder what tomorrow might bring, Kip said wearily, scratching his head with both hands as if he were shampooing his hair. A bombshell with every bulletin.
I haven't always seen eye to eye with Omos, but I don't believe he's a security risk. Luke had never handled frustration well, and age hadn't mellowed that. So now we have two threats, an external war and an internal coup. Where do we concentrate our efforts?
Well, Nyathol is well within her rights to assume power under the circumstances, Corin said. So it's not exactly a coup. And much as we might not like it as citizens with a vote, as Jedi, we have no business interfering in that.
Can I say it? Kip asked. Because it's just staring us in the face and nobody's mentioning it.
Go on.
Jason. There, I said it. Jason. What in the name of the Force is going on here? Okay, maybe we should have taken him to task when he started kicking down doors with the GAG.
Now, overnight, he's busted the chief of state and taken over. Extreme? Out of control, my friends?
Has he actually declared himself joint chief of state? Personally?
Silgall looked up.
Admiral Nyathol announced it. We've heard nothing from Jason.
Then maybe it wasn't his idea.
Luke looked at Mara to catch her eye, but she seemed in a world of her own.
Mara?
Sorry.
She snapped to attention, blinking. I don't see Jason being dragged kicking and screaming to the big office somehow. Regardless of who came up with the idea, he's hardly rushed to decline the honor.
He's gone to ground, said Kip. We've been through a whole 24 hours of news bulletins without seeing him.
Time I went to see him, said Luke. I mean really see him. Nyathol sent a message saying she wants to maintain the good relationship between the Jedi Council and the Chief's office. I'm taking her up on that as soon as she can clear her schedule.
You know what? Kip said. We're missing an important point. As Jedi, either we're players in GA politics or we're another instrument of the elected leadership, like the fleet. If we're the latter, then we might have our opinions, but we do as the legitimate leadership directs. If we're not, then we've got no more right to start interfering with the status quo than the monster-raving anarchist party. Jason might be completely off the charts now, but he's not acting as a Jedi. He's an officer in the security forces who happens to be a Jedi.
I'm seeing Nyathol, said Luke, slapping his palm down on the arm of his chair. And before we start griping about lack of action, think about this. When it was a matter of your not approving of Ben's involvement with the GAG, it was a choice between letting him carry on and hauling a teenage boy home. Now we're talking about action against what exactly? Stage our own coup? Depose Nyathol? Confiscate Jason's lightsaber? I'm up for most things, I admit, but we have to think this through, because we might leave matters worse than before we started.
Well, trying to talk him around is off the menu, said Mara. So I'm sticking with going after the irritant in this, Lumaya. But let's not forget that Omos didn't exactly behave sensibly, and Nyathol isn't in Lumaya's thrall. She's got her own agenda, and I don't get any sense of the dark side influencing that.
GAG Headquarters, Coruscant.
The worst thing about waking up that morning was the few seconds of blank comfort before remembering what had happened. And then the world collapsed again. Ben couldn't stop seeing Jory Lakoff everywhere he looked. He couldn't face staying at home. He needed the company of his friends, the people who missed Lakoff too. As he walked through the GAG security gates and the system accepted his identicard to open the blastproof doors, every face in the corridor was Lakoff's. According to the roster display, Jason was on duty. The time code showed he'd been at headquarters since about 1 a.m. Ben couldn't feel his presence, but that didn't surprise him now. There was a time when Jason had hidden in the forest when he had to. Now he only showed himself when he seemed to feel it was necessary. Without thinking about it, Ben found himself shutting down too. As he walked down the corridor, the tiles still gleaming with spots of water because the cleaning droids were just meters ahead of him, he let himself merge with the matter and energy around him. The more he did it, the less he felt like he was in a trance, cut off from reality, and the more he felt like he was observing the world as it truly was, particles within particles. It gave him a fleeting feeling of serene clarity. It was a relief of a kind. At the top of the corridor, a pair of doors led to the holding cells. That area was always kept shut, but today there was a notice fixed on the wall next to it that read, Top Level Clearances Only. They were holding Chief Omos down there. It seemed surreal. Ben carried on toward Jason's office, and he could see as he rounded the corner that the doors were open. As usual, he couldn't feel Jason's presence, but he could hear him talking to someone.
Who is it? Odd. I can't feel anybody else.
You overplayed your hand, said Jason.
You worry too much, said a woman's voice. That was the point at which Ben realized something was very wrong. Only a Jedi could be there and not be sensed, or a Yuuzhan Vong, and they weren't exactly frequent visitors to the GAG headquarters. And the voice was somehow familiar, even though he couldn't place it. Keeping himself hidden in the Force, Ben edged silently along the corridor and stood as close to the open doors as he could.
You cut it too fine, Jason was saying. There's being a decoy and there's being too clever, and you crossed that line.
Are you recovered now?
Yes, said the woman's voice. But it worked. It gave you the space to act without having her crawling all over your operation. She really thinks I want revenge for some daughter. I sometimes think your cover stories are too complex. And mind-rubbing Ben about Nalani isn't.
Ben recoiled. It was all he could do not to storm in.
Jason, you did that?
He wouldn't understand why I had to do it, said Jason.
And that's why he can't ever be your apprentice. Get rid of him. Find another one and stop wasting your time.
Now there's my real problem.
I can't help you there. Whoever it turns out to be, that's the Force's decision. You'll know very soon.
Well, I dealt with Omos anyway. A clear path.
Are you going to keep him here?
I thought house arrest might be more sensible in the long term. Republica House is easy to secure, and it makes us look like the good guys. People still like Omos.
And here you are, Joint Chief of State.
That way Nyathol thinks she can keep me quiet.
Or under control.
She's way too smart.
Play nicely with her. You need her to keep the military behind you.
You're such a strategist, Lumaya.
Lumaya?
Ben thought.
Lumaya?
Ben thought he'd misheard, or that his state of mind was making him hear what he wanted to hear, like Lakoff's voice. But he knew what he'd heard, and his first reaction wasn't one of fear or dread, but agonized embarrassment. He'd trusted Jason, and Jason had lied to him. He'd mind-rubbed him, and they were talking about him as if he was in the way. The fact that Jason was knowingly talking to a Sith as if they were old friends seemed to take second place to that. For all his denial, Jason knew Lumaya, and she could walk into GAG headquarters and just talk to him. Jason wasn't being conned by her. He was chatting casually with her about what he'd do next. Ben found himself scrabbling for excuses that would explain why Jason could be meeting with Lumaya and still be someone he could trust. Someone with a perfectly good reason for it all.
Jason's a Jedi. He can't be in league with her. She's done something to him. Mind influenced him or something.
This woman had left his mother with a battered face. This woman was all he'd been taught to fear and avoid. And Jason was talking to her in his office, as bold as anything. Ben knew he had to tell someone, but he'd run out of people to trust. If Jason could be influenced like that, anyone could.
Except Mom. Mom wasn't in Lumaya's thrall, or she wouldn't have been in a fight with her.
Ben had to find her. He had to warn her. That morning, he felt like things couldn't possibly get any worse. And now, he knew they could.
Bevin Vassor Farm, Keldabe, Mandalore.
Too much hollow news is bad for you,
said the man standing in the doorway of the outbuilding. Fett had spotted him coming. It was hard not to. His multicolored, unmatched armor was extraordinary.
It's riveting,
he said, nodding in the direction of the monitor that he'd propped on the table. The news anchors and commentators had descended into a feeding frenzy about the bloodless coup.
Jason Solo, the boy who wants to be Vader when he grows up. He finally did it.
He probably looks in the mirror when he brushes his teeth and tells himself it's his destiny.
And you are?
Venku.
He didn't have a proper Keldabe accent. If anything, he sounded like he'd spent time on Kuat, and maybe Moonlist too.
Sit down, Venku.
Fett gestured to the last remaining chair in the room.
Whatever it is,
Get it off your chest.
Venku still stood, ignoring the chair.
I came to tell you I'm relieved you decided to be a proper Mandalore. The Mando Ade are coming home. You probably don't notice much beyond your own existence, but this is your purpose.
Glad I could be more useful than a doorstop.
Which is why I'm also relieved to give you this.
Venku opened a pouch on his ammunition belt and placed a small, dark blue rectangular container on the table.
And don't mistake this for adulation or sentimentality. You owe your people. There will be someone along shortly to administer it. It's one of the local veterinarians, but if she can treat Nerf, she can treat you.
Venku turned toward the door as the word administer bored into Fett's skull.
Whoa there.
Venku glanced over his shoulder.
Don't try doing it yourself. It has to be inserted into the bone marrow, and that's going to hurt like you wouldn't believe. Let someone qualified do it. It'll still hurt, but they'll place it correctly.
So this was one of Jang's minions. Tell him we're even,
Fett said.
And thank him.
Venku started to say something, then stopped as if he was getting a message via his helmet. Fett tilted his own helmet in his lap so he could see the HUD display that was patched into Slave One's external security cam. A man tottered past the ship, clearly very old indeed from his gait, but still wearing full fighting armor, and paused to look at the ship. Then he moved out of cam range in the direction of the building. The old man appeared in the doorway, squeezed past Venku, and stared at Fett.
At least I live to see the day,
he said.
Sekui, Mandalore Gar Shabuir.
It wasn't the most polite greeting that Fett had ever received, but it was certainly the most relevant to a terminally ill man. It was the only possible way that warriors and mercenaries could greet each other. So, you're still alive. He'd worked out what Shabuir meant too, but he chose to take it as ribald affection rather than abuse. The old Mondo walked out with arthritic dignity, paused again at the door to stare at Fett, and went on his way.
You made his day, said Venku.
I shouldn't ask.
Then don't.
Venku sighed, then put his hands to his helmet to pop the seal. The rustle of fabric muffled his voice as he lifted the bouchet.
Oh, all right then.
Boba Fett was looking into the face of a man perhaps 10 or 15 years younger than him, dark hair with a liberal threading of gray, strong cheekbones, and the very darkest brown eyes.
I'm Venku, said the Mondo with the motley armor. But you probably know me better as Kadika. Interesting to meet you at last, Uncle Boba.
Osarian Tapcalf, Coruscant.
I couldn't think who else to tell, Ben said. Or who else would listen to me if I did.
Mara wondered if he'd been crying about Lakoff or Jason's breathtaking betrayal. He'd been crying about something, though, and he was doing a reasonable job of disguising it.
I believe you, Ben. Maybe I did imagine it.
You didn't. No, he certainly couldn't imagine Lumaya having a friendly chat with Jason, dissecting their run of triumphs and deciding when Nyathol would no longer be useful. And discussing their lies. No daughter to avenge, and wiping out Ben's memory of what happened to Nalani. Ben had the useful ability to recall things he'd seen or heard with nearly complete accuracy. Mara's scalp had tightened and tingled as she heard her son, her precious kid, relating the exact words of that Sith cyborg and her accomplice, like an innocent possessed by a demon. Accomplice. Mara realized she'd shifted her position by a few parsecs. Not a vain, conceited, naive victim of a manipulative Sith. An accomplice. Jason wasn't weak-minded enough to fall that far and that fast, unless he wanted to.
I haven't told anyone else, and I don't want to, Ben whispered. Not Dad, either. I mean, you can tell him if you think he really needs to know, Mom. But I don't want to see the look on his face when he finds out what a moron I've been.
No more of a moron than the rest of us, sweetheart.
What are we going to do?
I won't ask you to do anything. Mara had let her drink get cold.
Ben, you have a choice. I told Jason that Lumaya was trying to kill you, and he was all innocence.
So you knew about Xyost then?
No, I don't know anything about Xyost, but you're going to tell me.
Ben's face fell.
Jason sent me on a mission to Almania to recover an amulet that had some dark side power. I ended up on Xyost, and a ship attacked me. But I found a really weird vessel and got away.
Just like that?
It wasn't Lumaya, actually. It was a Bothan.
And how did you find this ship? Mara was trying to work out the scam. Just parked, hatch open, with the key in the drive?
Look, I'm not insane, but it spoke to me.
Oh. Mara had enough pieces in the puzzle now to see the rough shape of the picture that would emerge.
Spherical? Orange, like a big eye?
Ben's face drained completely of color.
Yes.
Tell me about it.
I worked out how to pilot it. It communicates through the Force.
And it's soaked in dark energies, I know. Go on.
I don't know how it works, but if you visualize what you want it to do, it does it. It sticks out parts of itself and forms them into cannons, all kinds of weapons.
Perfect. Perfect. Mara was getting a better picture by the second. Lumaya could think at the ship, and it would rush to do her bidding. Maybe even extrude a cable, whip it around Mara, drag her away, and nearly throttle her. It wasn't a droid. I got bushwhacked by a living ship. A Sith ship. So what happened to the ship between the time you found it and when I came across it the other day?
Where did you see it?
Hesperidium, when I caught up with Lumaya. Ben's shoulders sagged.
I flew it back to the Anakin Solo and handed it over to Jason.
Everything fell into place. The only pieces missing now were how she would put an end to this, but that was her specialty, and it could wait a while until she made sure Ben was safe. Okay, I think you know how serious this is, she said. Their heads were almost touching over the table. To the Osarians who used the restaurant and who spoke very little basic, they probably looked like mother and son having a tearful argument over homework and poor grades. They would never have guessed that it was about the fate of the galaxy. Ben, will you accept a suggestion from me?
Anything, Mom. I'm sorry. I'm so sorry.
Hey, I'm the one who should be sorry. But you're in real danger, and it's going to be more than you can handle. So I want you to be very cautious. I want you to behave like a coward for a change. Take no risks. In fact, I'd like you to report in sick and get as far away from Jason as you can until I get this fixed. Ben nodded, grim. Very old eyes and a terribly young face.
I'll do it carefully, he said. So Jason doesn't realize I've found out that Lumaya is making him do all this.
Oh, sure she is. That's right, sweetheart.
I promise I won't hide in the Force from you, but I might have to do it to hide from her. Or even Jason, if she's got him so far under her control that he's taken over the government.
Sometimes you had